It's Wednesday, June 24th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We've got some breaking news to announce before we get started. The New Hampshire legislature has just passed their medical marijuana bill up there in the Granite State. It's now going to Governor John Lynch's desk for either his signature or his veto. It should be noted that Governor Lynch had a problem with the idea of people growing their own marijuana medicine, and the bill then in the assembly had that right taken away. So if this passes, New Hampshire will be the first medical marijuana state where patients are not allowed to grow their own medicine, and they are forced to get their medicine from a nonprofit dispensary. And if experience is any guide, the prices in those dispensaries will be about $10 to $15 a gram, $45 to $60 an eighth. In other words, the same price as you're paying on the black market. I kind of question the wisdom of locking in that precedent, but we'll just have to see how it shakes out. Also want to remind everybody that High Times Senior Cultivation Editor Danny Danko will be our guest on Friday for Cultivator's Corner. If you've got any questions about marijuana growing, you can get the answer from one of the world's experts on marijuana growing, Danny Danko. So send those questions in to stash@normal.org. Had a pretty interesting day today. I got a fax from the people at McGraw-Hill, those folks that make the textbooks for high schools and colleges, and they're going to take an article that I had written on 420 of 2005 called Drug Testing Does No Good, and it's going to be featured in a management textbook for colleges. So it's my first article to be published in a textbook, so I'm pretty proud of that. You can check out the article online at stash.normal.org, where I've reprinted it. Also, some great videos from Chris Goldstein out there with the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey. Check those out on the blog. They're probably on page 2 at this point, but you'll want to see this testimony from some medical marijuana patients in New Jersey. And finally, some shout-outs. I've been speaking to people today from Australia. I actually got a call from Victoria, the state of Victoria down there in Australia, from people that are interested in starting a normal chapter. I've also spoken to people in Adelaide and Cairns and Brisbane and a lot of places on the continent. You're all so far apart, though, that we're going to need to start 4 or 5 chapters just to deal with you all. So if you're listening to me down under, please send me an email at chapters@normal.org, and I'll put you in touch with these other Aussies. Also, got a call today from, believe it or not, the state of Connecticut, with an activist there who wants to reform that Normal Connecticut chapter. We're probably going to hold off on that until the fall, but if you're interested in getting involved in Connecticut, send me an email at chapters@normal.org. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, beginning with the new UN report on drugs that does an about-face and endorses drug decriminalization based on the results in Portugal. You'll be surprised to find out what our drug czar had to say about that. CBS News has a story up called The War on the War on Drugs, which takes a look at the burgeoning popularity of the drug law reform movement. We've got a post from momlogic.com that takes a look at marijuana mamas, and you'll get my commentary on the need for more women in marijuana law reform, and some reefer madness from the state of Oklahoma and their official website's marijuana facts page. It's amazing how many lies they can cram into such a small page. Today is our regular Wednesday dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Today we're going to be addressing that report that came out last week saying that cannabis smoke will damage your DNA. Short answer, no, it won't. We'll talk to Dr. Mitch about that. For our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we've got music from Chief Greenbud, my friend from Nashville, Tennessee, who is an AMMA award winner for Male Artist of the Year. Very proud of that, so we'll be playing his song Token Bounce for today's musical break. And finally, for our cannabis conversation to round out the show, we're going all the way down to Cape Town, South Africa, the southernmost tip of the continent, to speak with Mike Kavitsky, who's the producer of a movie that features some insight on his friend Terrence McKenna, the famous psychedelic pioneer, a movie called Cognition Factor. You can check out more about that at cognitionfactor.net. So I've been speaking with Australia and South Africa today. It must be a Southern Hemisphere day, but wherever you are, it's time for your normal daily audio stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. United Nations backs drug decriminalization. From the Huffington Post. In an about-face, the United Nations on Wednesday lavishly praised drug decriminalization in its annual report on the state of global drug policy. In previous years, the UN drug czar had expressed skepticism about Portugal's decriminalization, which removed criminal penalties in 2001 for personal drug possession and emphasized treatment over incarceration. The UN had suggested the policy was in violation of international drug treaties and would encourage drug tourism. But in its 2009 World Drug Report, the UN had little but kind words for Portugal's radical, by U.S. standards, approach. Quote, "These conditions keep drugs out of the hands of those who would avoid them under a system of full prohibition, while encouraging treatment rather than incarceration for users. Among those who would not welcome a summons from a police officer are tourists, and as a result, Portugal's policy has reportedly not led to an increase in drug tourism," end quote, reads the report. Quote, "It also appears that a number of drug-related problems have decreased. The International Narcotics Board was initially apprehensive when Portugal changed its law in 2001, but after a mission to Portugal in 2004, it, quote, noted that the acquisition, possession, and abuse of drugs had remained prohibited and said, quote, the practice of exempting small quantities of drugs from criminal prosecution is consistent with the international drug control treaties," end quote. Also, for the first time, the report addresses legalization, but argues against it, by writing, quote, "Why unleash a drug epidemic in the developing world for the sake of libertarian arguments made by a pro-drug lobby that has the luxury of access to drug treatment?" End quote. Unfortunately, that perception exists because it's a report on drugs, not cannabis alone. It would be laughable to exclaim that legalizing marijuana alone is unleashing a drug epidemic in the developing world. Considering how 47% of all drug arrests in America are for cannabis, and a large proportion of funds expended worldwide on drug prohibition are spent on cannabis eradication and prohibition, legalizing marijuana would give drug control offices worldwide more resources to deal with the addictive drugs that are unleashing a drug epidemic in the developing world. One thing we desperately need to do as reformers is to decouple drugs from cannabis. We also need to emphasize that legalization is a very broad term. We need to point out that both morphine and aspirin are drugs, and both are legal, but we regulate them very differently. Beer and Bacardi 151 are both legal drugs, but you can get one in any supermarket and the other only at the adults-only liquor store. Alcohol is federally legal, but in California, you can get spirits in the supermarket, and in Utah, you've got to jump through a ton of hoops, and in some counties in America, you can't get it at all. So when we are calling for marijuana legalization, it doesn't mean that we want heroin and crack sold in convenience stores. It doesn't even call for marijuana to be sold in convenience stores. It doesn't even mean your local government has to allow marijuana, period. We just figure if we can come up with a regulatory system that allows adults to purchase and responsibly enjoy Bacardi 151 rum, we should be able to regulate something far less dangerous. It's also interesting to note that drug czar Kurlikowski this afternoon came out with a 781-word commentary addressing the UN report that endorses drug decriminalization without ever using the word decriminalization. Come on, drug czar, take off the blinders. You know decriminalization works. You've seen low priority in effect in Seattle. It's time to stand up for the truth. CBS News, the war on the war on drugs. The state with the toughest three strikes law in the land and a prison population of more than 150,000 is facing the real possibility of having to release tens of thousands of inmates early in order to pare its $10 billion annual correctional budget. At the same time, an increasing number of the state's political figures are challenging the basic tenets of the war on drugs, the culprit most responsible for the spike in prison populations over the past 30 years. They argue that the country's harsh drug policies are not financially viable and no longer command majority support among the voting public. For Betty Yee, chair of California's Board of Equalization, the office responsible for collecting sales tax in the Golden State, the changes, especially around drug law enforcement, can't come soon enough. Sitting at her conference table high up in one of downtown Sacramento's few skyrises, Yee has marijuana on her mind. Specifically, she has become an outspoken advocate for legalizing pot for residents older than 21. Her friend, Assemblyman Tom Ammiano, a former San Francisco City Councilman, is pushing just such a bill in the state legislature. Yee wants to levy fees on business owners applying for marijuana licenses, impose an excise tax on sellers, and charge buyers a sales tax. Do it properly, and the state could reap about $1.3 billion a year, she has estimated. Quote, "Marijuana is so easily available. Why not regulate it like alcohol and tobacco," she says, "and gain additional tax revenue into the bargain." Over the past three decades, California has tripled the number of prisons it operates and has more than quintupled its prison population, and has gone from spending $5 on higher education for every dollar it spent on corrections to a virtual dead heat in spending. That puts it in the same boat as Michigan, Vermont, Oregon, Connecticut, and Delaware, all of which, according to estimates by the Pew Charitable Trust, spend as much or more on prisons than on colleges. California is also under federal court order to implement costly improvements in the delivery of medical and mental health care services in prisons and to release close to a third of the prison population, about 55,000 inmates, to improve conditions for those remaining behind bars. You can spend money to arrest us, try us, and lock us up for marijuana, and we'll continue to spend our money lining the pockets of black marketeers. Or you can legalize marijuana and save the money on arresting, trying, and incarcerating us, and we'll continue to spend our money filling the coffers of the state treasury. What you cannot do is ever, ever stop us from smoking marijuana. We can get marijuana in your federal supermax prisons. We can get marijuana even in countries like Malaysia that have the death penalty for trafficking. Einstein said insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. For 39 years, you've declared war on your own citizens, ignored our civil liberties, shredded our constitution, sent police terrorists into our homes, murdered our pets, destroyed and stolen our property, and warehoused us in prisons, all in the service of eliminating the marijuana menace. And yet marijuana is as plentiful, as potent, as profitable, and as popular as ever. The Netherlands learned that people like to smoke pot, and generally they don't cause a lot of problems. They learned to not be hard on drugs or soft on drugs, but to be smart on drugs. They realized that some people have an innate desire to alter consciousness, and they've been doing so for 10,000 years. So they learned to tolerate cannabis use. The Netherlands this year had to close 8 prisons for lack of criminals. Are you listening, California? Marijuana Mamas, a look at the hidden legion of female tokers. From momlogic.com. Middle-aged, middle-class soccer moms are smoking pot. A lot. These women aren't stoners. They're teachers, lawyers, and perhaps even your neighbor who prefers puffing a joint to sipping Chardonnay. Quote, marijuana is the magic in my life that helps me unwind, stay sane, and have more energy, end quote, says Sonia, a 24-year-old mother from Los Angeles. Working full-time as a restaurant manager leaves Sonia feeling stressed out and drained at the end of the day. She smokes once or twice daily to relax. Quote, I have a stressful job. It's something that helps me wind down so I don't take out my frustration on my husband or my child, end quote. Mary is a 37-year-old, self-employed mother in Seattle who smokes pot several times a week. Quote, it is relaxing, fun, and once in a while I self-medicate for cramps or headaches, end quote, says Mary. She says she prefers smoking to drinking beer because it's easier on the body and has fewer calories. Mary buys her bags from a dealer, making it more risky because, quote, there's still a real danger of being arrested, end quote, says Mary. The website Chicky.com surveyed hundreds of women nationwide between the ages of 25 and 60 years old. Out of that group, 52% admitted to using marijuana at least 10 times a year. 27% smoked between 1 and 7 times a week. And 78% of those women knew someone who got high on a regular basis. Both women who shared their stories with Mom Logic say that many of their friends smoke weed, but while it seems marijuana mamas are everywhere, this silent majority prefers to stay in the shadows. Says Sonia, quote, they think if they admit it, it makes them a bad mom, end quote, says Sonia, who believes the opposite is true. Quote, it makes me a better mother. It clears my head and allows me to focus on my child, end quote. Mary says it's important to be a responsible smoker, quote, by doing it mindfully, only when I have downtime, end quote. Both of these moms support legalizing marijuana. Quote, it will help our economy, help our state, and take away that stigma, end quote, said Sonia. Mary believes pot smoking should be about personal choice, not politics. Quote, I'm an adult and I make life or death decisions every day. The drug war has killed lots of people. Smoking pot hasn't killed anyone, end quote. What do you think? Are these moms on the right track? Or are they whacked out on more than just weed? Moms, and women generally, are the great untapped market of marijuana law reform. As I noted earlier, listeners to this podcast skew about 9-to-1 male to female. High Times magazine has about the same demographic. And judging by our database of supporters, our board of directors, and the personnel of our state and local chapters, I'd say that 9-to-1 ratio is pretty accurate movement-wide. This is a terrible statistic in light of history. When we look back to the movement to end alcohol prohibition, it was the efforts of women, like Pauline Sabin, that fought back the prohibitionist mindset of those who'd imposed their own morality on others' private behavior. Here on the West Coast, we're blessed to have tremendously accomplished women leading the charge for marijuana reform. Normal has recognized some of these women with the Pauline Sabin Award in honor of and recognition for the crucial need and importance of women leadership in ending marijuana prohibition, including Washington State ACLU's Allison Chin Holcomb, Oregon Normal's Madeline Martinez, and California's Mickey Norris, head of the Cannabis Consumers Campaign, just to name a few. Personally, I rose up through Oregon Normal, which is not only female-led, but also a majority female board. But we need more than just a few female leaders. We need female foot soldiers, regular cannabis consumers like Sonia and Mary, to come out of the closet. When we men make the argument to end prohibition, we appeal to logic and reason, facts and science, cold utilitarian arguments. The appeal of prohibition to its supporters, however, has nothing to do with those, and everything to do with morality and home and, lest we forget, what about the children? Women can appeal to the emotional side of the argument, the fears about family and morality, as Pauline Sabin demonstrated in the early 20th century. Women can make the same exact point men can regarding cannabis prohibition, but the nature of generally accepted societal roles of women, being caregivers and mothers and healers and teachers, means that the message will be heard differently. For example, if I say, 84% of high school seniors say it's easy to get marijuana, it's out of control, nobody's checking IDs, nobody's verifying purity, and kids are the ones selling it. As a man, I'm interpreted as just stating an alarming fact. But when those same words come out of Madeline Martinez's mouth, she's interpreted as a grandmother fearing for her family. When I say it, it's a case of prohibition causes. When she says it, it's a case of prohibition threatens. So women, what can we do at Normal to bring more of the Sonias and Marys and you to get involved? How do we erase the stigma that cannabis use makes you a bad mom? As outreach coordinator, what tips can you give me on recruiting more women?
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
This is your Oklahoma Police on Drugs. Police say some of the dumbest things about marijuana, but this official fact sheet on cannabis from the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs Control, the dreaded OBNDDC, could you have a clumsier name? Wins this award this week for Exceptional Lies, Ignorance, and Propaganda in Service of Prohibition. Exceptional Lip Service. See? Cool acronyms are easy.
Cannabis sativa L is a species of tall annual woody shrub with male or female flowers borne on separate plants.
Okay, good so far.
Cannabis grows wild in most of the temperate and tropical regions of the world.
Yeah, still okay.
Hemp, as marijuana was earlier known, was grown in the New England colonies and used in making cloth and cordage.
Hear that, my New England friends?
The cannabis sativa plant material, marijuana, has been used as a drug for centuries.
If the plant material is the drug marijuana, what is all that hemp? An animal or a mineral?
It was originally used for the treatment of various mental and physical ailments. But after close examination, the Food and Drug Administration in 1937 declared it to be without medical utility and removed it from the marketplace.
Not even close. Congress prohibited marijuana in 1937 with the Marijuana Tax Act over the objections of the AMA, who knew its medical utility. The FDA had never regulated cannabis and had nothing to do with its prohibition.
The new marijuana in the marketplace is not the 1% to 2% THC, which is the psychoactive ingredient that produces the high.
Right, because 1% to 2% THC marijuana is something we call hemp, and smoking it will only give you a headache.
Today's new cultivation methods are producing a drug with up to 30% THC, or 3,000% higher than the old 1960s to 1980s available marijuana.
Wow! That's my first Super Pot is 3,000 times stronger than Woodstock weed reference. My previous best was only 400 times. But at least the math is correct. If you compare 1% industrial hemp that nobody smoked in the 1960s to the 30% THC hash oil that makes up a tiny sub-percentage of the cannabis seized, then yes, it's 3,000% stronger. It's also as meaningful as noting that Pabst Blue Ribbon beer is 3,000% more potent than O'Doul's.
Some people argue marijuana should be legalized for both medical and recreational use. But medical studies show how dangerous this idea would be. New data has shown that marijuana smoke has a higher concentration of carcinogenic substances than tobacco smoke.
Yeah, this is somewhat true, but ignores that THC mitigates these carcinogens with an anti-tumoral effect.
It is linked as a cause of lung problems such as bronchitis.
Yes, but not if you vaporize it.
And emphysema.
No, not true.
And studies confirm damage to brain cells.
Not true, and may actually protect alcoholics' brains and may be a treatment for brain cancer.
Damage to nerve cells?
No, and may actually stimulate nerve cell growth in the brain.
And damage to reproductive organs, which have led to stillbirths and birth defects.
Not at all true, and don't you think we'd see more hippie kids with birth defects if it were true?
In addition, acute memory loss.
No long-term memory problems, and only short-term memory problems while high.
And lowered immune systems have also been traced to marijuana smoking.
Right, that's why doctors give medical marijuana to HIV/AIDS patients.
Plus, surveys indicate that about 33% of all patients in emergency rooms test positive for either alcohol or marijuana in their systems.
Which just means the ones who tested for marijuana had some in the past few days, and not that marijuana caused the visit. Congratulations, Oklahoma. I now declare you the most reefer-mad state in the Union.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins, no, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
Visit normal.org today. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. Once again, it's the middle of the week and time for our weekly dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Welcome back to the show, Doctor.
Thanks so much.
And before we get started, I want to give you a hearty congratulations from everyone here who listens at the Stash for your achievement at the University of Albany, the University of New York at Albany there, for your Excellence in Teaching Award. Congratulations.
Thanks so much. It was really a delightful surprise, and I'm glad that it's getting so much coverage. Thanks again.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, a story came out this last week that got everybody on the Fresh Stash, talking about it. And they said, you gotta ask Dr. Mitch about this. And it's that story that we saw. I think it came across on Fox and some other outlets saying a new study shows that cannabis will damage your DNA. So, what's the story there?
This was without a doubt the most confusing reporting I've seen on a cannabis-related topic in quite some time. Some researchers doing a really great job working with the thymus gland of the calf, okay, we're talking sweetbreads here, showed that, in fact, if you expose them to lots and lots of marijuana smoke or tobacco smoke, you do get some changes in the way the DNA is in those cells.
Okay.
Unfortunately, people have thought this meant that they're going to smoke pot and have kids with one eye in the middle of their head, that their DNA was going to be damaged, and that's not consistent with this at all. Even the researchers go on to say, well, this kind of DNA damage in cells might be related to cancer, but as we've seen from actual data from humans, particularly Don Tashkin's work, we find that no, there aren't long-term impacts, at least on lung cancer, in many a cannabis user studied over decades in Los Angeles. So clearly this is not the result people were pretending it was. I also want to emphasize that if this had turned out the other way, that if tobacco had created this damage but cannabis had not, I honestly doubt we would have seen this kind of coverage. And in some ways, that's my new way of evaluating a news story, is if it had turned out the other way, would it be worth reporting? And that kind of tells you how alarmist this sort of stuff is.
What is it that they were trying to determine in this experiment, you know, using these calf cells? I mean, how is that, how does that relate to human health or to diagnostics or anything?
Well, it's neat because these guys are actually discovering some neat things about cancer and something called acetaldehyde, which is a compound that we see that's probably a carcinogen and is in a whole lot of products related to industry and pollution and tobacco smoke. And they thought, oh, well, here's another source of this. Let's see what we can do to see if this functions the way other things function. But again, we're talking at the cellular level here, not even in humans. And yeah, it does create this odd change in DNA structure at the cellular level when you basically smoke 10 cannabis cigarettes right around the calf thymus. But it just doesn't really suggest a reasonable parallel to humans. If we're concerned about cannabis creating cancer, of course, we've already talked about how the vaporizer decreases a whole lot of these potentially toxic components of smoke. And this kind of neglects the idea that THC does seem to have these properties that sort of decrease the development of tumors rather than increase its development, which unfortunately nicotine goes in the opposite direction and actually seems to make tumors markedly worse. So again, I'm not saying cannabis smoke is your first choice of breathing things, but these kind of data have been completely misinterpreted, particularly with this idea that DNA is involved and making everybody worry that basically their sperm is getting mutated.
Yeah, like I'm always fond of quipping, if marijuana was so bad for the sperm, that would explain why the Rastafarians died out.
Exactly.
No.
And I assume everybody's heading to Thailand for the food.
Yeah. Right. Now, this also leads me to another story, you know, speaking of carcinogens, and this was the story that broke out of California with their EPA, their Environmental Protection Agency out there in California, now listing cannabis smoke as a carcinogen, according to their Prop 65 law. What do you think about that designation?
It's funny because when you put these things right next to each other, the tobacco smoke and the marijuana smoke, well, you do see a whole lot of parallels except for that one key element, which is nicotine and versus THC in the cannabis smoke. And again, I feel like this kind of neglects the long-term impact of these. And a lot of those EPA-type decisions are just based on, let's take a look at what's in here not, let's take a look at what's in here and anything that might counteract the effects of what's in here.
Right.
So I feel like this is something that they may have felt a lot of pressure to do, given the things that are usually listed in cannabis smoke and how they parallel tobacco smoke. And tobacco smoke, rated as a carcinogen, does fit a whole lot of data. So I understand the pressure to do it this way, but I feel like this is alarmist. My concern is that this is going to turn into some kind of way to basically show prejudice against medical cannabis users who may need to step outside and use their medicine and suddenly are getting told, oh no, you're a carcinogen, run away, run away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that also leads me to wonder if there's been any studies on secondhand cannabis smoke that you're aware of.
The only ones that have shown up in the literature are all related to if secondhand cannabis smoke can produce a positive urine screen, and it doesn't really look like that's the case, unless you're in quite the foggy little hot box there. It really isn't probable that you get a positive urine screen just because you held the joint and passed it, or happened to be in a normally ventilated room where three other people were smoking.
Yeah. Now, if you're here in the studio with me, that might be another story.
That's a rather hot box.
Could be. So what I'm curious about, though, is when someone inhales the cannabis smoke, you and I have discussed this before and talked about how the absorption of THC is pretty rapid and taken into the bloodstream quickly. So that exhaled cannabis smoke, I'm wondering, you know, does it still contain all the acetaldehyde and these terrible carcinogens, but not the THC that would mitigate the carcinogenic properties?
Unfortunately, that's probably the case. We don't have tons and tons of data on this. I also feel like that's a good segue into the idea that this lung buster holding of hits is probably unnecessary. So yeah. When people take these big hits and hold them for 30 seconds thinking they're getting the most THC for their dollar, in fact, all they're doing is holding the carcinogens in longer rather than actually getting more THC. And if you just inhale from a joint and exhale, your odds are you're going to be just as high as if you do the giant holding of the breath. And in truth, just holding your breath in the placebo group in some of these studies makes you feel high from just holding your breath. So clearly it's not really paying off to do that kind of thing. And secondhand smoke in the cannabis world is about as real as tobacco smoke given the contents. But again, if everybody's vaporizing in the room, this is clearly not an issue. And, you know, stay in a well-ventilated area, and at least this time of year, by all means, go outside, enjoy nature while you're partaking.
Sure. And I want to let everyone know, too, as far as that California EPA decision goes, it's not like the EPA there studied cannabis smoke to determine, yes, it causes cancer. All they're doing is they've got a list of chemicals, and if that chemical shows up, check. They've got to, you know, list it as a carcinogen. They're not counting, you know, the synergistic effects of the other chemicals.
Exactly. That's absolutely the case. And in fact, when you look at that list, it looks just like tobacco smoke. And so I completely understand their predicament, because if they then didn't declare this, all the folks in the tobacco lobby are going to be nailing them to a cross.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. So before we let you go, Doctor, I know that you've got a new book coming out pretty soon. I want to give you a chance to tell people about that, because I know it's probably getting close to being released.
Yeah, it should be in the next week or two. Substance Abuse Problems, it's called, and it's part of the treatment series by the American Psychological Association. I was really flattered to be invited to use it and to write it. It's really for clinicians, but anybody who really wants to understand how psychotherapy with the addictions in general works, it would be a great thing to have. And I also recommend it for if you're seeing a therapist and you just don't feel like the therapist is clicking with you, grab this book and see if the qualities I describe and some of the techniques I describe are consistent with what your therapist is doing. And if not, by all means, find another one. This is a definitely a buyer's market now in almost all domains. And if you don't feel like you're getting that kind of relationship that really resonates with a clinician who you're working with, take a look in this book, see if they're doing what I say they ought to be doing, and go from there.
Is there any online outlets where people can get access to this book or to purchase it?
Amazon has it right now, and I believe it's $2 off there, and the American Psychological Association is plugging it from their website as well, apa.org.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us, Dr. Mitch. And we want to remind everyone, if you have questions for Dr. Mitch Earlywine about marijuana, cannabis, hemp, whatever you want to call it, you can send them to 420research@gmail.com and we'll answer them right here on the show. And, thanks for joining us again and take care.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. After winning Best Male Artist in 2008's Global Marijuana Music Awards, Chief Greenbud wins 2009's American Marijuana Music Awards Best Male Artist with today's song, Token Bounce. Chief Greenbud swept the 2009 AMMA with a quadruple win: Best Male Artist, Best Legalization, Best Acoustic, and Best Comedy, all of which we'll be hearing over the next 2 weeks. That's a total of 5 Marijuana Music Awards wins by Chief Greenbud in 2009, after winning Best Acoustic in the 2009 Global MMA. You can grab Chief Greenbud's CD and keep updated about his events and music at myspace.com/CGB. Congratulations to Chief Greenbud for winning 5 awards in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's my good friend Chief Greenbud with Token Bounce.
Fully understand you wanna get me high. I really do appreciate you sharing your supply. I really like your bong, but I can't hang very long, so let me rip it one more time and then you gotta let me fly. Toke and bounce, 'cause there's a lot of other kiddies got a lot of other stickies and they wanna get me high. I better get busy, gonna toke and bounce. I had a really killer time, you've got some really killer smoke. Yeah, you can take my picture as I take the last token bounce. Token bounce. Your token bounce. Friday night when I'm playing in a bar, a pretty little kitty wants to take me to her car. She'll break up a little bug and let me hit her bowl, and it won't take me 30 seconds till the panties hit the floor. baby, I could stay a little longer. Girl, you sure have pretty eyes. What's your name? I don't remember. Yeah, that's my hand between your thighs. Can you fill that bowl up one more time? I got a toe. There's a lot of other kitties, got a lot of other stickies, and they wanna get me high. I better get busy, gonna tote and bounce. I had a really killer time, you got some really killer smoke. Yeah, you can take my picture as I take a last toke and bounce. Toke and bounce. And bounce.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORMA. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORMAL, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our NORMAL Daily Audio Stash, Cannabis Conversations. Here at the NORMAL Daily Audio Stash, we always like to keep you informed about the latest movies and entertainment that are going around, giving us a little bit of insight in our history and some of the important people that have helped to make this reform movement as popular and as successful as it has been. Joining us here from Cape Town, South Africa, believe it or not, is Michael Kavitsky, also known as Schwan, producer of a movie called Cognition Factor that takes a look at Terrence McKenna and Dennis McKenna. And Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Russ. Thanks for having me on board.
Let's inform some of our listeners, because they might be, you know, some of these people are going to be a little bit younger and they may not know exactly who Terrence McKenna is. Can you give us a brief thumbnail sketch of who he is and why he's important?
Well, Terrence McKenna carried the torch after Timothy Leary, if you like. I mean, they were both Irish-Americans, and they both had the gift of the gab. And I think Terrence did a lot to popularize the psychedelic movement, as did Leary. Some people would disagree about the Leary statement, but most people would say that Terrence devoted his life to the decriminalization of the plant.
Exactly. And where does your relationship with Terrence begin?
Well, my relationship with Terrence began through a science fiction book I'd written about ancient San or Bushman people and flying saucers. And somehow we had become intertwined in cyberspace right in the very beginning in the early 90s. And I'd met him quite by accident, and we'd started swapping stuff, and He eventually came out to South Africa in 1996, and I think I was probably his best friend out here. And we'd spent a week here in South Africa, and that's how our friendship started. That was back in 96. And I've seen him since then in Hawaii in 1999 at the All Chemicals Conference, which was just shortly before he passed over.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, this movie now, Cognition Factor, I kind of introduced you as the producer, but I know you wanted to say that there's a whole lot of people that worked on this movie. How long has this project been in the works, and who else would you like to, you know, thank about this project?
Well, if you talk about the works, talk about the subconscious, because, you know, if you want to say when did it start, well, it's the glimmers started back in the 90s. But, yeah, as it got into, you know, post-millennium psychosis in the early 21st century, it started coming together as a project. And the footage that I'd shot back 10 years, some of the footage 10 years ago, started coming into play with stuff that I was doing in the present. And in that respect, Dennis McKenna had a lot to do with it, because Dennis agreed to come on board and to comment on Terrence, basically, which was a bit of an eye-opener.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I didn't know Dennis at all. I'd only known Terrence. So.
Right. So
a learning experience.
Yeah. So the movie is called Cognition Factor. And is this a biographical movie? Is it trying to tell a story, make a point? What are people going to find when they go and see this movie?
Well, I think the first thing is that it's not really a movie. Yes, it's an hour. Yes, there's film. Yes, there's audio. Yes, the orb are playing. Yes, it's more like an audio visual construct designed to crash test your brain.
Hmm.
I think that would be the way to describe it. If you're going to see a movie, if you think you're going to see a movie, you might be disappointed.
So it's not your typical, like, you know, telling a story, act one, act two, act three kind of thing,
yeah.
But more of an experience?
Well, there are acts in as much as that you have the question. I mean, but the questions are very basic. I mean, are we evolving as a species? You know, what is consciousness? What is the nature of God?
Hmm.
Will science and spirits combine ever to, you know, take us higher? And, of course, the final big one is, which everybody's interested in, is what happens when you die.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the plot.
Okay.
That's as it is.
Kind of a introspective sort of movie, I'd guess.
Well, if I look back on it, I see myself going through the various stages of filming and asking and all the questions, you know, that you have to go through to ask the questions and get answers and be able to put them all together into some kind of a meaningful and dare I say it, entertaining thing. It's not something such and sometimes a bit of a difficult sell.
Mm-hmm.
Esoterica, as it were.
Yeah. Now, you had your world premiere on the solstice. How did that turn out? How's the reaction been?
Well, we've had mixed reaction. We had quite a slow response in London. We had a sellout in New York. We had a slow response in Toronto. We had a sellout in Cape Town. We had a slow response in Sonoma. It was a beautiful day. It happened in the afternoon. But we had a sellout in Byron Bay. So, you know, I would say it's early days yet. I mean, the people that saw the movie, I've had mostly positive response. I get rage response as well. People don't get it, or they get annoyed with being taken out to be entertained, and maybe they have to think a bit much. We call it a smart movie, but that's like a kind of, my marketing department, such as it is, tells me don't say that. Screw that.
Well, it sounds to me as if it's not a passive sort of entertainment experience. It's more something that you're going to have to dedicate some of your thought power to. So I don't think a smart movie is necessarily a bad way to put it.
Yeah, but it does upset some of the stupid people.
Oh.
If you know what I'm saying. So
yeah.
Like you always knew, you know, like, you know, if you were smart, you kept it to yourself, you kept your head down,
uh-huh.
And the stupid people scream and shout, and you just let them get away with it, you know. But, you know, how much can you take? That's the question.
Yeah, exactly.
See the movie.
Yeah. Now, this movie, Cognition Factor, where and when will people stateside here in the United States be able to see it? Is it still showing, and is it going to be expanding to other cities?
The happy fact for everybody is if you go on to Amazon.com and you type in Cognition Factor, it will relieve you of your social debt.
Oh.
Probably a few dollars as well.
Well, that's good.
Or, you know, you could just go to the cognitionfactor.net site and buy it straight from the Cognition Factor site, or you could wait for it to come on circuit. But with things the way they are, I mean, I had interest from mainstream originally until I started talking about stuff like Smart Movie and that, and then it kind of, I think, between that and the stock market collapse.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's why, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, people don't have as much disposable income to go see movies, perhaps.
But it's I've only been up selling it for a week or two, and I must say I'm getting sales every day.
Well, good. Well, we hope we throw some more your way too.
Yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting coffee book experience because the DVD itself is not, it's like an Xbox 360 game. It's for gamers. It's like an inner, it's like for young people, but, you know, young people are so much wiser than we were when we were young.
Yeah, that's true. You know, they've had the luxury of being able to stand on the shoulders of giants like Terrence McKenna and Timothy Leary and these people who've blazed the trail beforehand. Now, for some of our listeners, you know, we got some young...
Let's even mention the granddaddy, Hugh Hefner.
Oh, well, Hugh Hefner, of course. Now, you know, we have some of our listeners are going to be younger and maybe not know as much about Terrence. But then again, some of our listeners are longtime members of this movement and probably know a ton about Terrence McKenna. Is there anything they'll find in this movie that would surprise them or that they maybe didn't know about Terrence McKenna?
Well, if they think they're going to come to the movie and see rehashes from YouTube, they're going to be sadly mistaken because this is all stuff that's shot by me.
Okay.
And nobody else has it.
Okay.
So that's, you know, the one surprise is that it's all new material of Terrence, and he's, you know, actually in a wonderful state of mind in the Maluti Mountains in South Africa with no thought police attached.
Hmm.
And besides that, there's a nice swing between Terrence and Dennis, and you see how it might have gone down between them in the, you know, the way they thought, you know, that the one would take the thought and they would bounce it back and forth. You can see Dennis is a more practical person for a start, you know.
Right.
So, you know, you start, it's like the peeling of the onion as you go down to it, you start recognizing maybe traits between Terrence and Dennis, between you and your brother.
Yeah.
It's an interesting experience.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on a copy of this movie. The movie is Cognition Factor. You can get a copy of it through Amazon, or you can go right to the website at cognitionfactor.net. And before we let you go, Michael, anything else you'd like to tell our listening audience about yourself, the movie, Terrence, or anything?
Well, Terrence, I'd like to say that it was a pleasure meeting him, of course, and it was just as much of a pleasure meeting Dennis. Well, I spent 2 weeks with him and had a wonderful time on the Costa del Sol. We had a lot of fun. So, yeah, mixing it up, it's like the whole movie's like a techno groove. It's like a mixture of life. It's coming down as it was. No script.
Excellent.
It took me much longer, but no script.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like an experience that I think most of our listeners will really, really enjoy. I'm going to encourage them to check out Cognition Factor at cognitionfactor.net. Michael Kavitsky is one of the people who's brought this movie to you and shot a lot of the footage for it. Calls us from Cape Town, South Africa. You're my first South African to speak to, so thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much for having me on board. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
leave you today with a little bit of 20th century reefer madness from William Randolph Hearst, the newspaper tycoon whose yellow journalism helped to enact marijuana prohibition, with quotes like this. Quote,
"Marijuana influences Negroes to look at white people in the eye, step on white men's shadows, and look at a white woman twice. Marijuana is a shortcut to the insane asylum. Smoke marijuana cigarettes for a month, and what was once your brain will be nothing but a storehouse of horrid specters. Hashish makes a murderer who kills for the love of killing out of the mildest-mannered man who ever laughed at the idea that any habit could ever get to him."
End quote. And Hearst's contemporaries are alive today, writing such stupid things like marijuana is 3,000 times more potent, or that marijuana smoke is going to cause your DNA to unravel. It's reefer madness then, it's reefer madness now, and we'll be here every day debunking it for you. Thanks for downloading the podcast, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.